Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome into Soccer Morning. Ready to go right here on worldsoccertalk.com. Hope things are firing off well for you. Let me just get myself together on a Thursday. One of those mornings that just doesn't go to plan, but hey, you know what? You make it better as you go. We've got a good show for you today. Brian Sciarretta from American Soccer Now will join us in just a couple of minutes. He also writes at the New York Times. You might know that. He'll talk to us about Americans playing abroad this season as most of the European campaigns get underway. I think we'll focus on some of those big names. There's a potential move in the offing for an American international. We'll get into that as well, perhaps, with Mr. Sciarretta. We've got some headlines to go over here in a couple of minutes, and it's a Thursday with a soccer match tonight, which is odd. We don't usually get the Thursday night game, but NYCFC hosting DC United tonight on a Thursday, so that should be fun. We had soccer last night. It's where we start with the news. U.S. Open Cup semifinals, the Philadelphia Union got a second-half goal from Sebastian Letoux to advance to their second consecutive final. It was Sebastian Letoux's 15th goal in U.S. Open Cup competition, which is a modern record. I think we keep that from, what, 96, when MLS entered into the competition. It's generally considered to be modern. So Sebastian Letoux with the goal that lifts the Union over the Fire and propels them into an Open Cup. That game, that final, will once again be in Philadelphia. That's because Sporting Kansas City beat Real Salt Lake 3-1 at Sporting Park last night. Sonny Mustafar, Benny Failhaber, and Christian Nemeth all scored for Sporting. They sort of manhandled RSL in the second half, took control, and move on to a final where they will take on the Union. I believe that game is set for September 30th. I'll double check on that. Just don't have that detail in front of me, but I believe that's when the final date is set. Costa Rica head coach Paulo Wanchope has resigned his post as Tico's manager after that incident at the stadium, the U23's Olympic qualifying match between Panama and Costa Rica. Wanchope was upset about the refereeing, got involved in a scuffle as he attempted to go through a gate, and now apparently it has cost him his job. He's decided to quote-unquote step aside. I wonder how much pressure was placed on Wanchope to force him out, but this is the second high-profile violent incident involving a CONCACAF head coach in about a month, and Miguel Herrera lost his job, and now Paulo Wanchope goes as well. Who's next? Can we get a three? Can we get a triumvirate? Can we get a triple? No, probably not. The Seattle Sounders have completed their deal to sign Panamanian defender Roman Torres. He was last with Millonarios in Colombia, 29 years old. Certainly bolsters the Seattle defense. They've had issues there at the back. He steps right in. We'll see exactly what this means for the Sounders moving forward. Of course, they are just absolutely free-falling right now in MLS play. I believe they've lost 8 of their last 9 matches as they head into the weekend. CONCACAF women's soccer qualifying for the Olympics in Rio next year will take place in Texas between Dallas and Houston. That's a February tournament, February 10th through 21st in the Dallas area and in Houston. The 8 teams involved include the United States, Mexico, Canada, include those 3 teams, and plus obviously 5 more. The games will be held at BBVA Compass Stadium, Toyota Stadium outside of Dallas, where FC Dallas play. Top 2 finishers earned spots in the Olympic tournament in 2016. The NASL has released a statement. If you remember, we may have, I don't know if we touched on this during the web show or not, but certainly a lot of chatter around American soccer in light of comments made by Bill Peterson, commissioner of the NASL, that they were looking to partner perhaps with MPSL moving forward. In a bid to find a way to make ProRel work in the United States, then the chairman of the board of the MPSL, Joe Barone, had his own interview in the Telegraph over in England, in which he said he will look to speak directly to Bill Peterson and work on specifics, et cetera, et cetera. Excuse me. NASL has, again, issued a statement that says, it's important to discuss the concept as part of the quickly changing soccer landscape in North America, and it's vital that we continue to contemplate what's best for the growth of our professional game. We have not, however, engaged in discussions with any parties up to this point. It's an interesting statement in light of the fact that Barone himself said he has had discussions with Bill Peterson. Now, maybe those were, quote-unquote, off the record. Maybe they were unofficial. Maybe they didn't involve the necessary behind-the-scenes powers that would help make a decision on the NASL part, but certainly interesting to see NASL sort of back away from some of the rhetoric that's been coming out in the last couple of days. I alluded to this a little while ago, but there is a potential bid, a potential move in the offing for U.S. international Tim Ream. He's, of course, at Bolton. Both QPR and Fulham are chasing Tim Ream at this point. I had a report this morning that said QPR had the deal done, and it was just a matter of personal terms. But latest reports out of ESPN FC say that Fulham is looking to match QPR's bid and could very well swoop. Is that what the word is, Trevor? Isn't it swoop? That's what they always go with. They talk about these transfer deals. Obviously, the window is not closed for another couple of weeks. In England, I'm not sure if the championship is on a different schedule or not. I don't believe so. But a potential move for Tim Ream coming. We'll ask our friend Brian Shiretta from American Soccer Now and the New York Times what that might mean for Tim Ream. Of course, he was in the Gold Cup squad, did get some playing time. That was after being out of the team for quite some time under Jurgen Klinsmann. Has he worked his way back into Jurgen Klinsmann's good graces? And what kind of playing time might he get if he joins up with the Cottagers or Rangers? Excuse me. There we go. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will grab Mr. Shiretta from American Soccer Now and the New York Times, and we'll talk to him not just about Tim Ream, but about players across the continent. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com.
Face in the crowd, you're talking too loud, but I can't hear you calling.
This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in too by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, here we go. We are back on Soccer Morning. It is Thursday. It is a fine, fine day to talk to our friend Brian Shiretta from American Soccer Now. You can also find him occasionally at the New York Times. Brian, how are you?
Very good, Jason. How you doing?
I'm well. All right. So we've got, like, the Premier League is underway. We've got the rest of Europe is starting to get going here. Action getting ready to start in Germany, and we've already actually got some games happening, I think, in the Netherlands. So we're going to cover as much of this territory as possible with the with the Americans that are playing overseas. I will start with the big news, and I closed my news segment this morning with it. Tim Ream, probably on the move. There was a report that QPR had sealed the deal with Bolton, $1.4 million or something in that area. But now we're getting word that Fulham is also still in the mix and could come in and make a bid over the top of QPR. Without knowing where he's going to end up, Brian, is this a good thing for Tim Ream in the end?
I think Fulham's very lateral. I think QPR probably gives them a little bit more of a chance to get promoted back into the Premier League. I think QPR is still, yes, Fulham is still not completely out of it, although I've been told it's unlikely. It's almost certainly going to be QPR. But, I mean, and I think that's a good move. He's very familiar with the league. He's going to help QPR out. He's a known commodity in the championship. He can prove and he can play at that level. So there's a zero risk factor for QPR to come in and get Tim Ream. I mean, they need a defender and they're going to get one of the better ones in the championship. So, I think it's going to be a very good move for all sides and, it gives QPR a very good chance of getting promoted.
If this leads to Tim Ream, by the way, 27-year-old Tim Ream at this point, if this leads to Tim Ream going back up and getting a shot in the Premier League, that's a good thing. There is a question for me about, you know, the general situation at QPR and whether that the lack of stability over recent years and some of their issues will affect him. But look, they're obviously going to be one of the better teams in the championship.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no stability in the championship anywhere. I mean, it's one of the more unstable leagues, unpredictable leagues, you could find. I mean, you know, you never know when debt is going to hit a team, you know. But like I said, Fulham were relegated and they lost their first six games in the championship the first year in the championship last year. So, I think it's going to help Tim, for all the unpredictability and lack of stability in the championship, Tim Ream brings that. That's his biggest asset. I mean, He's a two-time defender of the year for Bolton. He's proven that he can handle the championship. So he is Mr. Championship. It's a move geared towards stability and certainty for QPR.
Let's stick in that league. I mean, look, we know that the American presence in the Premier League has dropped off in recent years. A couple of goalkeepers, Jeff Cameron, who seems to be doing his thing and is playing center back again. DeAndre Yedlin. Before he moved back to the championship, what's the likely situation with DeAndre Yedlin? Is a loan coming, or is he going to end up just being a reserve player for Tottenham this year?
My guess is that a loan is going to be coming. Nothing's certain, nothing's finalized, but I think that, you know, I question how much he's going to be able to get out of Tottenham's U21 team. Mm-hmm. He's beyond that. He's older than that. Or U23 team. So I really think that a loan makes the most sense for all parties involved, and I think that DeAndre has enough leverage there as a national team player, some World Cup experience. I think he has enough leverage there to get it done. They'll have some suitors willing to take him. That's my best bet right now.
All right, let's go back down to the championship. We've got a couple of interesting names down there. And look, the known quantities are Danny Williams, Jonathan Spector still hanging around doing his thing at Birmingham City. Eric Lehi still in that league, but I think the names that people are most interested in are Emerson Hyman at Fulham, Cody Cropper at MK Dons, who I know you have a piece on recently. There's a couple of other names. Both of those guys. What's the outlook for Hyman first?
Well, Hyman, I think, is a player who might want to move on. I think he has higher ambitions, and right now Fulham is a team. You want to talk about lack of direction, you know, and instability. I think that Fulham really has some question marks there. And, you know, I think that the championship is an easy league to get stuck in, mired in, and just, you know, you stay there for years and years and years unless you, you know, assert yourself and make something happen. And he's in the last year of his contract. He's the captain of the US U20 World Cup team that did well. And he has some, he's earned very good reviews for his play last year for Fulham's first team. So I think that there, he makes himself attractive for some options. And, you know, when thinking about your long-term future, I think a lot of guys are always going to be looking to get out of the championship if they can, especially if they're not on a team that's favored to get out of the championship anytime soon. So, you know, I think it wouldn't surprise me if a move happens sooner than later.
I have actually seen a little bit of speculation around him. Is there any team specifically identified? We're talking about moving out of England. I don't imagine a Premier League team's coming in for him.
No, I don't think a Premier League team is, but it wouldn't surprise me if, I mean, I've seen Stuttgart's name thrown around there too, and but it also wouldn't surprise me if perhaps he goes to someplace like Holland. Now, he has the European passport. He has a Portuguese passport, so he doesn't have to deal with the usual rules and regulations that make it almost impossible for many other Americans without those options to make those moves. The move killed Juan Agudelo's career in Europe. But it was without having a EU passport. You know, he has that. So he's going to have some options potentially in Spain, but you know, it's going to come down to where can he get paid and where can he get playing time. Sometimes it's hard, tough to find both these days. I mean, you can look around Spain sometimes and paychecks aren't always, come to you on time. So, same thing with Portugal. So you have to look at a lot of different options, but I think he's going to have those options right now, given his age and his status and the reviews he's earned for his play so far.
To colonialism benefiting Emerson Hyman with that Portuguese pass. Sorry, that was.
Yeah.
I just think
about as far of a stretch as you can get.
Yeah, I was just thinking through. I'm like sitting there going, Portuguese. Oh, Macau was a Portuguese. Okay, I get it now. All right, so
yeah.
Let's go to Cody Cropper, who's playing at Franchise FC and MK Dons, the team everybody loves to hate in England, but still a quality team in the championship, brand new fancy stadium the last couple of years. And obviously getting an opportunity to play or work his way into a chance to play. What's the situation with Cody Cropper?
Well, he's the number two behind David Martin, and David Martin's been at MK Dons for a while now, a couple stints on loan, but I think he's made over 200 appearances for the team. I mean, the thing that Cody has going for his favor is that David Martin has missed time. He's never really played a complete season injury-free. So as a certain number two, he's going to get minutes, either League Cup, FA Cup, and perhaps League, you know, depending on what happens with David Martin. So this is exactly what Cody Cropper needs. He's 22 years old now. He's not as younger for a goalkeeper than it is for other positions, but it's still, a time when he's going to need to step into his own. And, you know, MK Dons is an interesting team because they have a very small budget by championship standards. So there are a lot of, people have them pegged as potential relegation battlers. And so they're going to be under fire. The goalkeepers are going to be under stress. So it's going to be a real test for Cody. And, you know, at this point in his career, he needs that. He needs to get, you know, he needs to face shots. He needs to stop them regularly and limit the gaps that he's had a couple times, too, playing for U.S. youth national teams. He's a good, talented keeper, but I think playing time is only going to help limit his mistakes and errors and perhaps maybe help him realize his potential. I think he's in a good spot right now to at least get some opportunities to show what he can do.
So if we put a wrap on the championship talk here, is there anybody else that American fans should be keeping an eye on? I mean, there's a couple other names here, a couple of dual internationals still lurking around in the championship who have yet to really feature heavily for any American teams that I'm aware of. But is there anybody else worth watching?
I think that's the real bait. You know, you covered all the bases. I mean, a lot of the guys who are at like the younger levels right now are still a ways off right now. I think all the people in the championship that are relevant are known commodities. And I'm really looking at Danny Williams to see if he can, you know, really help Reading become the team that they want to be and be out of the championship back into the Premier League. And he's a big part of that, but last season was very disappointing. It's a question of whether or not they can turn it around now.
All right, let's go to Germany and talk about the Bundesliga. Obviously, there's a heavy American presence there, both through the German-American players, now through Aaron Johansson. He moves on from AZ Alkmaar to Werder Bremen. Let's talk about that move. I think everybody's pretty much universally agreeing that this is the right step for him, that this is the natural move from the Netherlands to Germany, Brian. He's going to get an opportunity to play, and Werder Bremen is one of those clubs with aspirations, but not the pressure won't be so immense that Aaron Johansson will wilt underneath it.
Well, what I like about the move is that he's needed. He's not just seen as like a luxury commodity who might see some minutes here and there. They need him. They lost a forward, Franco DeSanto, and they need a replacement. I mean, they lost two top leading scorers, which are 22, which is, I think it was over around 21, 22 goals last year, were gone. And Aaron's going to have to help fill that void. And so he's going to get his chances. It's out of necessity. And I also like it too, is because, they have a stable coach, a guy who's played with them. And then once he retired, well, moved into their coaching youth system. And now he's the first team head coach. So there's stability. It's not one of these guys who moves to a club, the coach likes him, and then the coach is fired, then he's on the bench. I mean, we've seen that a lot of times with Americans making moves to various clubs throughout Europe. He's at a club with stability and a club that needs him and a club that likes to play attacking soccer, too. They were sixth in the Bundesliga last year in goal scoring with 50 goals. So I think it's there's a lot of things going for it and a lot of reasons why people should really like this move.
All right, again, the German-American presence is heavy. We've got two guys we know about, Fabio Johnson. We know about John Brooks. We know about Timmy Chandler. I think everybody's a little down on Timmy at this point, and it doesn't look like he's going into the season with a full head of steam, considering the comments of his coach, Brian.
Yeah, his coach was critical about him playing for the U.S. national team at the Gold Cup, and he said some pretty harsh comments, thick comments. He was saying, it's up to Timmy how he wants to move forward with this, and it's up to him. He does it playing for the U.S. national team does nothing for me or Eintracht, and it's up to him to decide what he wants to do. It's pretty much telling him not to play without specifically coming out and saying that. And, Chandler said, he's going to continue to accept Jurgen Klinsmann's call-ups should they still come, which I think a lot of American fans would like to think that that's not a certain thing anymore. But, I think he's got to get back into the starting lineup. He missed a large chunk of preseason, but, I think if you look back at how last season went, he started off on the bench, but gradually got back into the first team. And he has almost 130 Bundesliga appearances. He's a known commodity in that league. Everyone knows what he can do. Coaches know what he can do. And they know what level he's at. So I think that level is proven to be acceptable in the Bundesliga. So I think he's going to gradually work his way back into the starting lineup. It'd be tough to think like a Gold Cup can kill a guy who's proven himself in that league.
Okay, let's go to John Brooks. Also a Gold Cup, a player who featured in the Gold Cup at Hertha Berlin, 22 years old, obviously a favorite of Jurgen Klinsmann. Over the last couple of years, just kind of dipping my toes into the situation whenever it seemed appropriate, he's been a little up and down. I mean, that's natural for a young player. Is this the year that John Brooks shows some consistency at Hertha, or are we going to see another sort of up and down? One week he's a star of the league, the next week he's making a bunch of gaffes that lead to goals.
It's a question about maturity for him. I think the gaffes will on the field are going to resolve themselves so long as he, grows up. I mean, we've seen his maturity called into question by his coaches. I mean, he had the famous, infamous back tattoo incident where he got the large back tattoo, was too sore to play in a Bundesliga game, and he was benched for a while because of it, and rightfully so. And I think, he's the kind of guy that on the field is always paired with someone a little older, a little bit more experienced, and he's usually the more silent guy and less vocal. And then when he goes to the national team, you pair him with Ventura Alvarado, then all of a sudden he's supposed to be that mature guy in the back line, and it's just a completely different role for him. So I think, it's going to be, he's going to be in his, third, fourth year now as a professional, whether in the two Bundesliga or Bundesliga with the same club. He should be very familiar. He should, with the system, the team, and the responsibilities of this. So, the question is he can become more vocal, more dominant, more of a leader in that back line as opposed to being more passive and just kind of going wherever the leaders on the back line take him. And I think that if he takes that leadership role, a lot of the gaps, I think, are going to be resolved themselves through just growing up and becoming more mature.
All right, a couple of youngsters I want to focus on here briefly. First up, Julian Green, we know that he reportedly decided to stay with Bayern Munich this season rather than go out on loan. I think all of us believe that to be a bit of a mistake. Now, clearly, look, loan situations have a lot of problems inherent in them, Brian. You know, as you said, with coaches, sometimes coaches change their mind or they get replaced midseason. If you have a player on loan that you didn't opt for the first place, that player then gets relegated to the bench. What's best for Julian Green and what do you expect from him this season? Because he has taken a complete nosedive in his development.
Well, of course. I expect if he stays at Byron's U23, he's going to have to dominate. I mean, again, but he's already done that. So he's doing what he did 2 years ago, and that's where's the challenge? Where's the step up? Where's the progression? It's just not there. Look, I understand that the loan didn't work out, and you know, and you're right. Loans are tricky for young players, pretty much because the team you're loaning them to has no vested interest in the player's development. They don't care whether or not he goes up. If he goes on loan, it's got to be a loan to sale kind of an agreement where the team could buy him if they like what they see. Because look, let's face it. I mean, the ability and the likelihood of Julian Green to become a key contributor for Bayern Munich's first team is small. I mean, and you can still be a great player without being good enough to play for Bayern Munich's first team.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So it's, I mean, you got to at some point realize that, you know, if maybe way down the line, if he becomes that great player that he dreams of becoming, yeah, Bayern Munich will want him back at some point. But he's got to think of going to a place, not just on loan, but with the potential to call it home. And stepping out and dominating but staying at Bayern Munich's U23 team is a regression. He's going to lose two straight seasons in key developmental years, and he'll never get those back again. And it could really, and right now, by way of American prospects, domestically or in other European leagues, you could see him surpassed on the U23 depth chart, not just the full national team depth chart. So it's a very disappointing. But those comments that he's staying at Bayern Munich's U23 team just came from his agent. They didn't come from the club. So, you know, maybe take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Maybe that's just posturing and negotiating. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if a loan happened, but, you know, it's something that it really has to happen at the worst case scenario in January.
Let's talk about Joe Zhao. Injured at the end of last year, if I remember, I don't remember exactly when it happened, but I know it was a setback for a player who had made this move to Dortmund. And we, at the time, I think, Brian, at least some of us didn't know exactly how this was going to work out. Dortmund was one of those clubs that was challenging for Bundesliga titles and clearly had a lot of talent at their disposal. He actually did make some inroads there. Then he got hurt. I hear he's back and that the injury wasn't overly serious, which I don't think I was aware of until the new season was getting underway. What's the prospects for Joe Zhao this season?
Again, it's going to be tough. He missed a lot of time, and he also was making inroads to Dortmund at a time when Klopp needed to shake things up. I mean, they had a really terrible start to the last season, and they were looking to send some warning signals for a bunch of players that were underachieving. Joe's a good player, but still he's a very inexperienced player. I mean, it's a guy who, you know, his first loan to St. Pauli, just didn't really work out that well. So, you know, they had an option to extend his loan and St. Pauli declined. Then he goes back to Dortmund and, you know, and see some first team minutes there in a time of turmoil. I think from a U.S. national team perspective, it's great because he plays a position of need. But as to how close he was to becoming a full team regular there, within Dortmund, you know, supposing that those first team players who were underperforming got their act together, remains to be seen. I mean, it's one of those things where he's at a club that's so big, so much talent at their disposal and so many resources to acquire new talent that when you leave a club for 6 months, whether it be for injury or anything, it's very tough to get that back. The club's moving quickly to replace you. I mean, unless you're like a guy who's like Aaron Robin or something, you know, players can be left in the dust quickly. So it's a good question. Nothing's really set, but let's hope that the injury's not as serious and that he didn't lose a step because speed is everything for him.
All right, that's another 22-year-old player, Jerome Kiesewetter at Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. Made his debut at the top division last year, but of course at you know, and 22 is about when you need to start doing that. But he's also a guy who was on loan as recently as 2014 into 2014. So what's next for Kiesta Vetter?
I mean, he's got to get out of Stuttgart's U23 team. He began the season there, and he started. He was playing for the club in preseason, the first team. He got the first team contract. And again, like Joe, he was a player who made his first team debut, although it's very good in the Bundesliga. But he made a team when Stuttgart was in the relegation zone, underachieving talent, and the coach says, "All right, you guys aren't playing hard or playing the way I want you to play. I'm going to bring in some younger guys that are going to push you a little bit and try to challenge you." And he did that. They brought in Keith Spetter with one of those guys, and he didn't really stick around, unfortunately. The coach reverted back to the veteran players, and they stepped up and avoided relegation. So, you know, it's not really question. It's a little bit in debate whether or not he was really settled in the first team or whether or not he was just kind of like a tool to motivate people that were underachieving. But, you know, he's got to really step up now. Now, this is going to be a key season. If he doesn't really make any real inroads into Stuttgart's first team, I think he has to start looking at other teams, maybe to Bundesliga or out of Germany. I mean, this is a real transitional year for him. So we'll see how it goes. He could probably get some looks also with the US U23 team in Olympic qualifying. I know that they liked what they saw from him in Toulon. But, you know, those loans that he went on, he went back to Hertha. I think that was a little bit of homesickness. I don't think he was comfortable stepping outside of Hertha just yet. It was when I spoke to him, a guy who enjoyed living at home and stepping away from Berlin was challenging for him. He went back, and then he came back, and he came back to Stuttgart and looked better. So I think that loan worked for maturity purposes more than anything else.
Let's go down to the two Bundesliga. Talk about a couple of names there quickly. Guys that Americans will be watching, obviously Bobby Wood stands out because of what he did on that European trip for the United States national team. He's at Union Berlin. Good move for him. I mean, I know he's played a cup match. It's hard to know exactly what the season will bring yet.
Yeah, I think it's a good move for him. I mean, they really like him. He's going to get some playing time. And it was such a bitter end to his time at 1860 I think it's anytime you're going to get playing time, and he's going to be asked to score a lot. So hopefully he's given a set position. He's not going to move out to the wing. He's going to stay in his forward position. And they're going to be very patient with him, and he's going to polish up his skills. And I think for the first time in a while, people are going to see what Bobby Wood's all about, you know, even more than the national team. Those were a couple of brief appearances that he did well, but how is he going to do week in, week out when he's playing close to 90 minutes a game? That's going to be a completely different story. And I think people are, you know, with all the injuries and the falling out he had at 1860, it's been years since Bobby Wood has really had a clean slate and a paved road, really, to show what he can do. So this is going to be a real test for him, it's going to be, who knows how it's going to turn out, but you know, they like what they see from him so far.
All right, let me do this way, since we are running short on time, and I have at least one or two other players in leagues I want to touch on. Out of Terrence Boyd, Andrew Wooten, and I guess just those two, who has the better season? Andrew Wooten's 25 at Sandhausen, and Terrence Boyd obviously coming back from or having moved on from Austria into Germany with our Red Bull Leipzig. A lot of expectations for national teamers that he figures out how to get back to his old form.
I still say Wooten because he's not dealing with any injuries. His role on the team is set. And he's a proven goal scorer in the two Bundesliga. And he's off to a hot start right now. So Terrence Boyd, there's a little bit of question marks right there, in terms of, you know, he's the injury and, whether or not he's going to be able to crack back into, Leipzig's, lineup. I mean, they're a high spending two Bundesliga team. So, there's too many questions right now about Terrence Boyd to say he has better prospects than Andrew Wooten at the moment.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's move to, the Netherlands, because there are a couple of players, just two that I'm aware of. If there's more, you can let me know. Maybe some coming through the youth ranks, but certainly senior team guys, very young players. I believe both these guys are 19. Rubio Rubin at Utrecht, obviously American national team fans know him a little bit. And DeSavio Payne, who's a dual international and got some time with the U20s. Let's start with Rubin. Look, a lot of expectations. He's shown some good things with the full senior squad. Obviously, he's played with the youth teams as well. What's 2015-16 like for Rubio Rubin?
Well, I mean, there's always potential he could play with the Olympic team, but I think that he's not going to be released for that. I think it's going to be a time where he's going to have to fight for some minutes and prove he belongs. I mean, he got 2,000 minutes and as an 18-year-old last year, and that's very, very good. And it's for the Eredivisie, but now it's the time to, he's going to try to take a step up, score more than 3 goals. Now he's going to have to, the competition's a little more tight for him to earn some minutes. So if he can do that, he's going to have to step in and perform. Hopefully the competition and the pressure brings out the best in him, but I still think he's got a great future. I mean, what, you know, this is all natural for a 19-year-old to have to face some kind of adversity, and we'll see how it goes. He's still a young player, but like I said, 2,000 minutes in his first professional year as an 18-year-old, very, very good. And he had a pretty good preseason to boot. So I think he's going to definitely see his earn his time, but it's a question of what he does with it. And I like his chances. I think he's going to polish out his game. He's a smart player.
All right, fair enough. Elsewhere in Europe, players that you're keeping an eye on, anybody that U.S. national team fans or youth squad fans should be looking towards?
Well, you mentioned him right there to stay in the Netherlands. Dezebio Payne, I think, is going to be very good. Unfortunately, he picked up an ankle injury and he's out a month, starting in the beginning of August. And I think he was trying really hard to get back into the, U.S. to go move up to the USU 23 team for their upcoming camp in London. It's a question of whether or not he's going to get healthy by that time. But, he loved his time with the USU 20. He was very good at the World Cup. And, looking forward to seeing if he can, make that quick transition. And of course, you know, other players too. You got to look at Cameron Carter-Vickers, mm-hmm. who's been training with Spurs first team. And it's going to be very tough for him to push for any kind of first team minute at Spurs. But, it's a question maybe alone or maybe, they let him play a lot with the USU 23 team, but he's obviously a very highly rated prospect, in central defense. So yeah, there's plenty of names to go around, and Andrea Novakovic too at Reading. There's another guy who is not released for the USU 20 team, but, he's a forward and Reading have first team plans for him this year. So the future is bright over there. It's a question now of them taking the next step into earning first team minutes and going beyond just being those youth guys with just potential and now starting to realize that.
Brian Schiretta from American Soccer Now and the New York Times. Obviously, we're looking ahead to the European seasons opening up all across the continent. We didn't touch on Scandinavia. They're all deep into their campaigns. Maybe we'll have a different discussion about some of the guys who are playing their soccer there. Brian, appreciate the time as always. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Jason. Appreciate it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, talk to you about any of that. U.S. Open Cup, Olympic qualifying for men, women, everybody. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from 6 of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning. Phone lines now open, 646-832-3909. We can talk about that U.S. Open Cup semifinal round last night, a couple of good games. I suppose, I don't think the Union Fire game was much to look at for a while there. I checked in on that one. There was definitely some intensity and some good stuff happening in that Sporting RSL match, however. Clearly RSL bested by a better team, and it didn't matter that they used the weekend to rest some of their older, more important players ahead of that game. Now, that wasn't entirely about that game. We know that. It was about just the number of matches in a short time span, for Jeff Kassar and company. And, you know, I'm seeing some, like, general disillusion with the way things are going out in Utah, that people aren't happy with Jeff Kassar, that there's some real concern over the future direction of that club. And I wonder how much we should get on RSL fans if they are upset at this point. I mean, they've been spoiled a bit. They've been in the playoffs every year. They've been contenders every year. They only got the one MLS Cup, but that's one more than a lot of teams have in recent times. At some point, you kind of have to suck it up and just deal with a dip in your team's fortunes, don't you? I mean, how angry are we allowed to be when our team goes from contender to mediocre over the span of a year or two? I don't know. I'm not sure, Trevor. I don't know what you're saying, and that has no context to it. But I'm guessing what you're saying is that fans are always like this, right? That this is just how fans react to things. Yeah, I know. I wonder. Maybe this is just the way of the world. The dynamic is the fans of the team get upset, and then everybody else who is supporting a team that has had it worse over the last couple of years gets to yell at them for being completely spoiled about it, right? I guess that's just the thing. That's just the way it goes. 646-832-3909. And it's not even, I'm not going to throw stones at the RSL fans. I'm not going to really hate on the people who are calling them out for being completely entitled at this point. You're used to what you're used to, I guess. I mean, if the New England Patriots won three games this year, I'm sure there would be lots of people who were calling for major changes and whatever. Let's talk to our friend Roberto in Connecticut. What's up, Roberto?
Hey, Jason. Good morning.
Good morning, my friend.
I was wondering if you saw the list for the UEFA Best Player in Europe, the final three.
I saw it was it's Messi, Neymar, and who else?
Suarez.
It's Messi, Neymar, and Suarez.
I mean, Messi, Ronaldo, sorry.
Ronaldo, okay, not Neymar, Ronaldo. I'm sorry, that's my fault.
No.
Messi, Ronaldo, and Suarez. So. Yeah, I did see it. I didn't really take a whole lot of note of it because at this point, this is what Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo have done to awards. They've made them boring. They're boring. There's no debate anymore. Our debate now, instead of who's the best player, because it's either Ronaldo or Messi, and generally speaking, it's Messi, it's not even who's the second best player. It's who's the third best player. That's where we're at
exactly.
Now with awards.
That's what most people are debating about.
Yeah, and it sucks away all the fun. Like, you don't even get to argue about who should win the award. You argue instead about who should be the third place finisher or who is the third guy on the list. Is Suarez really the guy that should be on the list? I mean, who cares? Is it third place?
I mean, now, I guess, once they're done, and hopefully they are, with having to argue about who's the first best player and who's the second best player. These other guys that are finishing fourth, fifth, like Hazard, Neymar, Suarez, Pogba, they can now have the debate to see who could be the best player in the world in the future.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we're still 2 or 3 years away from Lionel Messi taking a dip enough to be off these lists. And there's going to be like this residual echo. Like, Lionel Messi could score 25 goals in a season instead of 40 and still be on these lists because he's Lionel Messi. And that's not, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but these lists tend to be about profile and reputation as they are about actual production. So we are still a ways away from Messi dropping off. Ronaldo just hit 30. He may have one or two more years at peak level where he's scoring buckets and buckets of goals. So he's not going anywhere for a little while. Hazard is amazing. Pogba is a great player, but we're talking about 5 years before these guys start showing up on these lists. And by that point, I mean, how old is Eden Hazard right now?
23.
Sounds about right. So 24. He's 24. Just turned 24 this year.
24.
So Eden Hazard is not going to be on the list and a favorite to win until he's 28 years old. Which isn't bad. I mean, that's not terrible. That's peak level for a lot of guys. But it just, it goes to show you how dominant Messi and Ronaldo have been, how much they've shut everybody else out of these awards, and how ridiculous it is that we are talking about third place. I mean, that says a lot of things. It says, one, that Messi and Ronaldo are so amazing historically that we should absolutely be appreciative of living in these times, Roberto. We should be amazed that we get to live in these times with these two amazing players. And then the other thing is that, you know, it's the awards are dumb and we don't, whatever. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they're popularity contests. Yeah. They're based on a bunch of different. I mean, if people, this is where we are. Not only are we debating third place, but we're arguing whether or not a player like Messi, not for this award maybe, but for other awards, should have points deducted because he doesn't win with Argentina. Are you serious?
I mean, Ronaldo hasn't done anything for Portugal.
I know. Why does that not stick to Ronaldo as much as it sticks? It's because, I know, look, everybody assumes Argentina is a better team and has more talent than Portugal. And generally speaking, that's true. But it's not as though Portugal is a slouch. And yet, Ronaldo doesn't win anything. And people don't hate on him for it. Messi fails to win a World Cup or fails to win a Copa America. And he's, you know, he'll never be Maradona. It's ridiculous.
So why are we talking about Ronaldo if you go a big back? You know, like Luis Figo, for example. He's done everything at the club level, but nothing for the national team level.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's doubting that Luis Figo is one of the, you know, best players of the last generation. It's just a very strange situation. All right, man. What else you got?
I'm just wondering as well. It's like, okay, if you look at the remaining, I think 30, 35, look at the list and look at what you agree and don't agree. No Sergio Aguero in any of the 30.
Oh, well, that's kind of ridiculous.
Top 30.
Right? Yeah. I don't have the list in front of me, Roberto. You have to give me a second. Your UEFA Best Player in Europe Award. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah. We're talking about the UEFA Best Player in Europe Award. Okay. Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, Suarez are I have the top 10 here. I don't have the full 30. Let's see.
Even the top 10 is a bit ridiculous, don't you think?
Oh, wait a second. Yeah, the top 10 is Lionel Messi, Ronaldo, Suarez. Those are the three finalists, so I don't have... Buffon is 4? Is that what I'm getting here? Buffon?
Yes, Buffon is 4.
Buffon, Neymar, Hazard, Pirlo, Vidal, Tevez, and Pogba.
Yeah, that's not incorrect order. That shouldn't be incorrect order.
That's,
in the sense that, what, you think Buffon is the best goalkeeper in the world?
No.
Because of that?
No. And you've got 5 Juventus players in the top 10. And nothing against Juventus. They made a Champions League final. But you're going to tell me that Pirlo, Vidal, Tevez, and Buffon all deserve to be on this top 10 best players of the year? I don't know about that.
I mean, you could debate maybe about Pogba, Vidal, and Tevez, who's been brilliant as well.
Yeah, sure.
But not
sure.
But
no, but even Tevez, I mean, Tevez is a fantastic player, and he meant a lot to Juventus, but he was more of a, I mean, how do I say this? Tevez was important to Juventus, but that doesn't mean he was one of the best players in Europe. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, Pogba, sure.
Clinical.
Yeah, Tevez clinical. Tevez scored goals when he needed to score goals. How many did he score last year? We're not talking about, I mean, you know.
30? I would imagine 30.
I don't know. I don't know if he got to 30, did he? If he got to 30, then maybe I'm wrong about
this. Trevor.
Goals, 20. He scored 20 goals. Okay, 20 goals in the league. He scored 7 goals in continental competition. I don't know what other is. So, I mean, look, let's give him 20.
Copa Italia.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's cup games here too. He didn't score in the Copa Italia. I guess 27 goals is good enough. 29 total in.
It's all right. No, it's good. I mean, Icardi was the top goal scorer in Serie A, but he's not top 30 in UEFA.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird list.
It's all confusing and mindless in a way.
It is. And look, again, it's about recency effect. It's about popularity. It's about who you know where you play, because you know. Look, again, Eden Hazard, great player, the only Premier League player on this list. And I'm not saying the Premier League is the best league in the world, bar none. There's not a single Bundesliga player on this list. You know, again, five Juventus play, five, not just one or two or three, not like, hey, Juventus got to a Champions League final. Let's recognize Arturo Vidal or Paul Pogba, who are certainly great midfielders. Let's recognize, I guess Pirlo maybe. I mean, he was influential for them. So, okay, let's recognize Pirlo, but come on, Buffon, really? I mean, I love Gigi Buffon, but he's not number four. It's insane.
I wouldn't be surprised, Jason, if this happens to the Ballon d'Or later in January. The same list, the same rankings.
Yeah, something. Well, I mean, again, something like that. Okay, I actually have the full. All right, I have the full 35 now. Let's see. Yeah. Arjen Robben, Manuel Neuer at 12. Okay, Carlos Bacca. Okay, that's fine. Iniesta, Morata, Mueller, De Bruyne, Ibrahimovic, Bale. Really? Gignac, Lewandowski.
I don't get Gignac.
Now, well, I mean, look, Gignac was fine for Marseille, but I don't know about 19th best or whatever in the world or in the continent. Lewandowski, Rakitic, Jerome Boateng, okay. Xavi Hernandez, Jackson Martinez, Mascherano, Alexis Sanchez, okay. Yeah, Chiellini, so another Juventus player. Firmino, okay. Nemanja Matic, Milik, Otamendi, Ramos, Ter Stegen. Okay. And Arda Turan. Whatever.
No Aguero.
No Sergio Aguero. Yeah, there's no Sergio Aguero. There's no, man, I don't know. I don't know. It is what it is.
No Timmy Chandler.
No, okay, come on. Now I got to kick you off the air. No, I'm just kidding. Appreciate the call, Roberto. It's an interesting discussion.
That's fine.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Take it.
There it goes. At 646-832-3909. Anybody else? Trevor, give me a name that's missing from that list. I mean, again, you can't expect a lot. You can't go into this best player in Europe list and think that you're going to get anything approaching the actual best players in Europe. You're getting a lot. Jabril Cisse, obviously. Yeah, those are... There it is. Like, I got no problem with the top three. I mean, Suarez benefited a lot from playing with Barcelona, but he was incredibly good with Barcelona. We know that Ronaldo remains one of the best players in the world. You know, the gap between Messi and Ronaldo and everybody else is extremely wide. Then it becomes the argument over Messi and Ronaldo, and there doesn't need to be an argument. They're both great players. Messi's going to win this, of course. But again, Buffon, Pirlo, Vidal, Tevez, Pogba. I mean, Hazard I got no problem with. Robin, Neuer. Okay, Neuer needs to be there. Neuer should probably be in the top 10. Carlos Bacca, Iniesta. Okay. Whatever works, guys. Whatever works. 646-832-3909. By the way, what would a top 35 best players in CONCACAF list look like? Anybody? Like the first 11 of Club America? Michael Bradley? Maybe Michael Bradley at this point? I'm trying to think of who else is in that list. I mean, it would certainly have Robbie Keane on it. He's playing CONCACAF these days as a LA Galaxy. Man, can we figure that out? Best player, forget top 35. That's too much. Top 10 best players in CONCACAF. Where's that list? I don't mean like CONCACAF like players who are overseas that play for CONCACAF nations internationally. I'm talking about the list being players who are currently with a club in CONCACAF. going to be a lot of Mexican, lots of Liga MX players with a couple of MLS players sprinkled in, I'm guessing. I don't know if there's anybody else that's going to get represented. Maybe Eddie and Brooklyn could tell me if anybody playing down in Costa Rica deserves to be on that list. Top 10. Not top 35, but top 10. There might be a couple of players down there somewhere. But again, I'm not talking about like who's the best CONCACAF player in terms of nationality. I'm talking about who's the best CONCACAF player in terms of club. Jovinko's probably in top 10. Yeah. Thank you, Avid. That's absolutely, or Avid. Sorry. I get it wrong every time. Yeah. 646-832-3909. Let's build that list on a Thursday. Let's talk about CONCACAF's list as opposed to UEFA's. If you have any thoughts on the UEFA list, please jump in. We talked to Brian Shiretta from American Soccer Now. I'm seeing a note here for something that I didn't get into. I missed. Definitely have to come back around and talk to Brian about that. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Shiretta. It's SCIARETTA. Obviously, hit us up on Twitter at Soccer Morning. I'm at Davis JSN. Producer Trevor, who's openly taking submissions for a new logo for the Best Soccer Show, you can be part of that. Part of that effort at Hey Hayward. HEYHAY. We're heading into a big weekend. And again, I mentioned the MLS match tonight. Sort of based on that this morning until getting ready to start the show. And I remembered that there was a game tonight. NYCFC and DC United. Yesterday we talked on the Sirius show, and I'll bring it up here, a little bit about the difference in philosophy between the two clubs, or at least the way that they're going about building their teams, et cetera, because Stephen Goff of the Washington Post has a pretty in-depth article on the perspective of DC United and its players on how NYCFC is building the club. Now, obviously, DC United doesn't have the budget of NYCFC. Its ownership is choosing not to put that money in. They're hemorrhaging cash because of their relationship with RFK Stadium. Clearly, that's something holding DC United back. That you could argue that they are succeeding in spite of some of those factors. But you also have these comments, one of them from Chris Rolfe. Clearly a leading figure in the DC United team, a guy who's not on a lot of money, a guy who went to Europe for a little while but played in a second-tier league in Denmark. He said that he did not respect the way NYCFC was building their club because they were foregoing a culture. They were choosing to forego a culture by spending money, $15 million total, on Lampard, Pirlo, and Villa. And I don't know that those things are mutually exclusive. And I think it's a little harsh for Chris Rolfe to say that. Now, is that sour grapes? Is that Chris Rolfe sort of just bemoaning the fact that the club he plays for doesn't spend much money or doesn't have a lot of money? Isn't splashing the cash on players like Pirlo and Lampard, or is he accurately assessing the situation? I'm not sure he's right. That doesn't mean that NYCFC isn't doing things incorrectly, or isn't doing things outside of the norm, or isn't somehow slowing the growth of any sort of team culture. I just think that the notion that spending money somehow precludes you from having a culture is the wrong way to look at it. And I did bring up this example, and Trevor reminds me of it. And look, to Goff's credit, he included it in the piece as well. The LA Galaxy have spent a lot of money over the past 8 years. When they first signed David Beckham in 2007, all the way through, they've spent big money on certain players. They've also built an incredible supporting cast who has helped that team win 3 titles out of 4. They are, without a doubt, the flagship franchise in MLS, the number one club. You follow, if you want to do things the quote-unquote right way and be successful in MLS, you do them the LA Galaxy way. And part of that program is spending a lot of money on certain players. And I think there was visible evidence this past weekend when LA was playing Seattle, scoring goals, winning that game. Giovanni Dos Santos is making his debut. Clearly, he's making a lot of money as a young Mexican international of immense quality coming in to serve not only as a marketing engine for that club, but to help them win. In the stands, next to that chef guy, what's his name? Gordon Ramsay. Hanging out with his boy, Gordon Ramsay, was David Beckham, the original DP, the ODP. That usually stands for Olympic Development Program in soccer, but we're going to go with ODP, original DP. David Beckham sitting there with Gordon Ramsay, and you could tell this wasn't David Beckham killing some time. He wasn't there doing an appearance. Maybe he was. Maybe he was there to talk to Galaxy Brass about something. I mean, clearly he's got the whole Miami thing, but he was definitely there as a former member of the LA Galaxy and a current member of the LA Galaxy family. And there's definitely a culture there. And maybe David Beckham was a major part of building that culture, but regardless, it's still a culture. I think that team has an identity. It's not just about throwing money at something. And now, look, give NYCFC some benefit of the doubt. They're not going to do that in 1 year. And that's another part of the Rolf quote that bothers me. And look, I don't want to be too harsh on Chris Rolf, because I think it's natural to imagine that just throwing money at something isn't really putting in the investment and the effort. But I just don't think these things have to exist on different planes. Spend cash in MLS, build a culture. You can do both things. You can also be budget-minded the way RSL was and build a culture. They have a culture. RSL absolutely has a culture. And maybe DC United more falls in line with RSL, but it doesn't mean that LA and Seattle and Toronto and NYCFC can't build their culture. Building a culture is more about the people in charge and the attitude and the community spirit and the togetherness and all that wacky kind of mushy stuff we talk about with teams. Guys who, I mean, we talk about all the time, Jose Mourinho, certain players over in Europe, talk about they love the club. I love the club, is what Mourinho says. I love this club. I love Chelsea. The club is in my heart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what is it that makes the club? This is a very existential kind of question that I'm fascinated by. What makes the club? Is it the colors? I mean, that's nothing. Colors mean nothing. Is it the colors? Is it, what is it? It's not the players. The players change all the time. It's not the coach. The coach changes all the time. You know what it is? It's that feeling around the team, right? And that's connected to the people that you have in places like, give me an example of a job at a club that would be around for 30 years. Those are the people who make the club. Those are the people who give the club an identity and a feeling, right? I mean, the grounds crew who, you know, are behind the scenes. Nobody really knows who they are, but the players go out there and they know who those guys are. The guys that are, the trainers and the guys that are doing all of the equipment stuff for a club. There's a bunch of staff. I mean, the people in the front office just doing paperwork. People you've never heard of. Those are the people who make the club and give it a culture. Because without those people, it's just a name on a wall. It's just a logo. That's all the club is. I mean, it's the same thing with a company and a culture. What does that stem from? It stems from the leadership and the people, the support staff, and sort of the attitude these people have about making it a fun place to be, an enjoyable place to be, a place where it feels like you're part of a family. That's what the culture of a club is. Does DC United have a culture? I mean, I'm sure I could ask a player. They'd probably say yes. Here's our culture, whatever. I'm pretty sure the LA Galaxy have a culture. NYCFC may not have a culture because they haven't been around long enough to have one yet. I think that's part of, you know, some of the issues that we kind of ignore when it comes to MLS. All right. Phone lines are gone. You guys aren't interested on a Thursday. It's cool. Went on a little bit of a rant there. I think it's a fascinating subject. Again, When Didier Drogba re-signs for Chelsea because he loves the club, what does that mean exactly? What does he love? The stadium? You could love the stadium. I suppose that's part of it. Again, the people that he comes back and sees after being away for a couple of years, the people behind the scenes. Certainly it's not Jose Mourinho, who could leave at the drop of the hat and did leave at one point to come back. I mean, you know, again, these are interesting subjects to consider. All right. Thanks very much to Brian Sciarretta today. Thanks to Roberto for his call. It's a fascinating discussion about the top 35, the UEFA Best Player of the Year award. We're going to roll. Go to backheel.com, buy yourself a mug and a t-shirt. There's a bunch of them there. What else do I need to tell people? Go to Soccer Morning on YouTube and subscribe. I got some stuff in the works. If anybody out there, let me just do this real quick, Trevor. If anybody out there has an incredibly interesting theory about conspiracy and soccer, let me hear it. Hit me up at Davis JSN. I need to pick somebody. We're gonna work out one of our new efforts here, Soccer Morning on YouTube. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Friday. See you then. Bye.
Did my invitations disappear? What I put my heart on every cursive